getting up is hard. But I think that, being a self-starter, being able to, be self-motivated and get up. And because you don't just have to like get up and show up, you have to get up and lead.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Empire Life Podcast. I'm Allison Ramsey, your host. And at Empire Life, we mentor female founders in scaling their online businesses. And here at the podcast, we interview women from all around the world about their success stories, A to Z, and how they got to where they are right now. And right now we are with Laura Johns. She's our special guest, and she's the founder and CEO of The Business Growers. And I'll hand it over to her to introduce herself a little bit more.
Yes. Thank you so much, Allison. I'm really glad to be here. One of my missions in life is to empower women at every age. And so I'm really I love what you're doing, and I'm really thankful to be a guest today. I run an agency currently that serves founder-led B2B technology companies, and our sweet spot really is that 50 or less employees that either don't have a marketing team because they can't afford it maybe, or maybe they don't need a full marketing team, but they need some help to support potentially one in-house person or no one at all. So we fill those gaps for our clients and have built a really fun business with upcoming Monday will be 17 women that work for me. So really excited to continue our conversation.
Me too. Wow. We have five at this point and I'm always growing. It's super inspirational to hear about that. And we're all women as well.
Yeah, love it.
And I want to dive right in and ask you, what are some challenges, Laura, that you feel like you've needed to overcome in your business? And after you've overcome some of these, how did they benefit you and make you feel stronger?
Yeah, well, that's a really great question. I have one that comes to mind that I feel like I'm past, and one that I'm maybe not too far past. I'm a little still in the middle of, but I can already see victory on the other side. So I'll talk about that too. But really early in my business, I didn't want to pin it as this, but I do believe that the bottom line was, I don't know that I really fully trusted myself. And so I always wanted to hang on to, and this is, coming from someone who really likes financial stability, which as an entrepreneur, you have to take risks. And so early on when I started the business, I was always looking for that safety net, which I think to an extent is smart to do, but at the same time, you really just have to step out in faith a lot. And so really early on, if I could kind of go back and rewind things, I would have believed in myself a little bit more and maybe taking the leap to do things without having a backup plan. I do feel like that hindered me at the very beginning of the business, just always questioning, what if this doesn't work? Maybe would have silenced that voice a little bit. And then now I'm actually in, I started in June. So I've been transitioning for the last couple of months out of being the one kind of primarily responsible for as the client point of contact in my marketing agency. So we actually serve our clients with a very high touch service. So we're really more kind of your marketing partner versus an agency where we're transactional. We don't do any project-based work. Everything is in partnership. It has been very hard for me. I've always been the worker bee my whole career, always been the one that's been head down as the CMO for other tech companies. And so it's really, I've learned through reading a book, Buy Back Your Time, highly recommend for any CEO that's really looking to figure out what the most important things are in their business to focus on. I've been in that exercise these last few months, and I'm trying to really focus on what lights me up and what's going to move our business forward. Understanding that staying knee deep in the client work might actually hinder the business's growth versus help us accelerate. So I have officially stepped out of being the lead in client work, and now I'm working on, okay, what's the vision for the next few years? What's what are our most important priorities, our rocks, and things like that. So that's a challenge and a hurdle that's taken me a little over 2 years to overcome.
I feel like that's something. Well, I relate completely to that. Yep. And I feel like I go back all the time and I try to think, okay, is this task that I'm doing right now, how much could I pay someone per hour to do this task? I try to ask myself that question.
Yes. Have you read the book, Buy Back Your Time?
Does he say that? I haven't.
He actually calculates your buyback rate. So your buyback rate is not your hourly pay. There's actually a formula that he gives. Dan Martell is the author of the book. There's a formula that he gives you, which again, I'm very like practical. So I needed that. I didn't need to, you know, there are a lot of business books, a lot of like whimsy ideas and, you know, great to think about, but really I needed like something tangible. And he gives you a rate that's your way to calculate your buyback rate. And you ask yourself, for this exact dollar amount, could I hire somebody to do this? And if the answer is yes, do it every time. So I highly recommend the book. It's great.
I love that. I love those practical ways to think about it. And sometimes at the same time, when if you're listening and you're just getting started, you need to do it. You need to do it all. And I'm a firm believer of that. But because you have to know how to do it in order to hire someone. Or you have to have some idea of how to do it well in order to tell someone how to do it or delegate the process. But I think the problem, like you were mentioning, are the challenges to have the goal to eventually get to the point where you're going to delegate it. Sometimes we're just going through the motions and doing it rather than having that goal at the end of it. Okay, eventually I'm going to delegate this.
Right.
It's just like, it's got to get done, like loading the dishwasher instead of teaching our kids how to do it. It's got to get done.
Folding the clothes. Yeah. It's easier sometimes. And I will say, for those of us who are doers, who really, you know, I'm an Enneagram 3. I don't know if you're an Enneagram person.
No, I'm an 8. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm an achiever, a doer. So it's especially hard for those of us who, especially when that internal voice says, well, you could just do it in 2 minutes instead of tasking it out or sending instructions, but I'm not helping the business grow that way. And that was what that book actually did for me, was make me realize that I'm not benefiting the business. Actually, no one is benefiting if I just keep doing all the things. So
yes, all the things. And another way I like to look at it, I feel like maybe 8s on the Enneagram are good at telling people what to do.
Yeah, that's a great quality. Yeah.
It's a great quality, especially if I'm stressed, that's where I go. I'm like, please do this and please do it not like that, like this. And I start, I'm like, I know that I need to do that. But sometimes I don't get to that point until I'm really stressed, which is better to have systems in place and everything. But one time I had a mentor tell me, sounds like you're the bottleneck of your business and that's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
And it took a while for that to click for me, because we just think I got to do all the things. It just has to get done.
And I think, until I realized that it was actually hurting the business, that's when I made the shift.
And how do you feel about a morning routine, Laura?
That's a good question, because I have a 7-year-old, I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and we're just coming off of summer. So that's a wonderful question. I am very type A, and a morning routine is really important. But I've also learned in the last 7 years after having my first son that you also have to have room for flexibility, because having kids means that not everything's going to go the way that you think. But morning routine is very important. I've actually reprioritized some things over the last couple of months. I have gone back to prioritizing my exercise in the mornings, which now I'm taking a shift to turn 40 this year or at the end of last year. So I am makeshift, I think all of us may, where exercise is no longer for my body as much as it is for my mind. I'm not trying to, get a 6-pack or fit into something different. I'm strictly just trying to really just be my best self and be mentally clear. And so I do that in the mornings. And I also have learned after my exercise, I learned to prioritize just 20 minutes. I'm just giving myself 20 minutes in the mornings to sit. That's really hard for an Enneagram 3 to do, just sit. But a therapist has challenged me to finish a cup of coffee without doing anything else.
Wow.
In the morning. It's very, when I first did it, I thought, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. And it's actually very hard to do for me. So I do that. I finish a cup of coffee every morning by myself before I wake my son up at 6:30. So once the kids are up, the routine is just getting them out the door, getting them to school. But yes, prioritizing exercise in the mornings and the 20 minutes for myself is critical now. I've come to really
like it.
Love it.
That's extremely inspiring because I usually try to do, we've been waking up about 6, going back to school and driving my daughter to school. Yeah. And then we're thinking about having more kids because I just recently got married. Yeah. And then I just turned 41 this last year. So we're almost the same age. And I agree that it's necessary for me to work out for to just take out my frustration.
Yes. And I
think that time in.
Yeah, I had to release the expectation of it like changing anything about my body. I mean, I know that it does on the inside, but I think for some reason, for the longest time in my 20s and 30s, I could work out, you know, and do a certain thing for a couple of weeks and notice a change. And so now I've just kind of released the pressure of like doing it for a change in my body and doing it more because I deserve to have mental clarity and to be the best mom for my kids and the best boss for my team. It's just something that's kind of now become a necessity for my mind.
Yeah, I felt like I needed to release that too. It's not the same.
Yeah, it's not.
Eat a little bit less and go to the gym
right.
in your 20s and you lost 20 pounds in a few weeks.
Right. Yeah, we're just doing it to be the best version of ourselves. And I think that's okay. You know, I think that's
okay.
That's beautiful. To me, that's one
beautiful.
Of the things about, hitting 40 and realizing that, you know, under my eyes looks a little different and, you know, my body looks a little different, but people that love us are going to love us. And, you know, the rest, we can just do the best with what we have. So I think that's.
Yes. And it's a great example too, to work out for that benefit for your kids, for your
right.
kids to see, I'm going to do this because I feel better. I would always tell my daughter that when she was really little, like I'm doing this because and so, and then she started repeating it back to me, like, mommy needs to feel less stressed. Mommy needs to feel better. So go work out, mommy. You need to feel better. You feel better. You're a better version.
And I love to see the my son. So I have a Peloton. I'm a big Peloton fan. I got it during COVID and that actually like changed the whole COVID experience for me. I actually got the best shape ever because I was at home all the time. But I do love whenever I'm doing like weights through the Peloton app or on the screen. They have these little mini weights that come with the bike. They're like 3 pounds or whatever to do weight exercises on the bike. And my 3-year-old will come in and he'll pick up the 3 pounds and do his workout with mommy. So it's pretty fun.
Did you post about that on your Instagram?
I may have. Yeah, I probably did.
I feel like I saw that. I was like, I didn't even know that was a thing. I love it.
Yeah.
I want to dive right into and talk about any time that you felt some resistance come up. I mean, it might have been with working out or taking the next step in your business, hiring the next person, delegating more. What do you tell yourself? Or do you have some kind of mantras? Or
I'm a woman of faith, so I will say that that's a big part of the decisions that I make. I think that I also really rely on the people around me. I've built a team that I really trust. That's actually our very first core value is trust. So trust, balance, growth, and solutions. So those are kind of our 4 core values. But trust being the first, I did that intentionally. I know that's going to be what it takes for me to be able to step out and lead the way that I want to, is be able to trust in my team. But also, I think that if you do face any challenge, being able to kind of bounce that off of somebody you trust is really important. So if I ever experience, I've had a couple of scenarios. I will say the deeper I get into my business, the more really hard conversations I'm having, both with my team, really primarily with my clients. You know, there have been clients that have expectations that were never a part of the offering that maybe I gave, or, you know, expected me to be more hands-on with the project after I sold it. And that was not something that I intended to communicate up front, but apparently that's what they understood. So I've even had a client that has actually accused me of making a change on a website that I did not make. And so those are like, they seem kind of, you know, simple, but I've always wanted people to like me. That's a big, you know, I guess flaw of mine. I don't know, but when you have that as part of the way that you lead, you want people to like you, and then you have conflict and you have clients that make accusations that aren't true. You really have to lean into, I say, your own personal core values. So just like in our business, we have established core values. I have established core values as a person. And so if anything I say rubs, I don't know what the better word is, but if I feel like a challenge internally, sometimes you feel it in your gut, sometimes you feel it in your heart, sometimes you start sweating, you know, but there are moments where you feel challenged with something, your heart starts beating fast, and I know that one of my core values is being challenged. And so I have to force myself to stop, think about what that is. And then obviously, like, clear as kind is something I'm learning. It's Brene Brown. I'm not sure if you're a Brene Brown person, but I love her. And just remembering that clear communication is really going to be the best, you know, the best thing you can do in those scenarios. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but really just leaning into the people around me that I trust, and then also like listening to my gut whenever I have, and really trying to focus on, okay, what value is this rubbing for me? And in that particular scenario, it was interesting where the client accused me of making a quick change on a website as if I was making a change so that he wouldn't have seen a previous version or something. And I immediately called it, like I felt it. Mm-hmm. And what I felt was he doesn't trust me. And again, trust is a business core value. It's an own personal core value of mine. So I immediately called him. And the gap, I will say, of when I feel something and will take action on them has really closed in a lot in my last couple of years as a business owner. It used to take me a couple of weeks maybe to be able to address it, you know, confidently. And now with a lot of practice, I'm getting to the point now where when I feel it, I say it, and I'm just clear. And so that's kind of a little tip, I guess. But that's what I go to is, you know, what value is it rubbing, and what can I do about it now?
That's a great tip. I grew up surrounded by a lot of chaos outside my house and inside. And I think though something or a strength that came out of that was being able to breathe and stay calm through the chaos and cut through all of the noise. Yes. Hey, this is what we need to solve here.
Yes.
This is what we need to focus on and be able to clearly communicate that to the client, even if they're emotionally heightened and maybe they're saying things that aren't fully true. Yeah.
And I think a lot of time, and I talk about this in my team a lot of time we will make assumptions either about our clients or, you know, we'll make assumptions in our other team members, especially like working with other team members. We'll make those assumptions in our head. And then we won't, you have to stop and think, like, what am I making up and what is actually true? Because that's really, you know, a lot of times we're making up things about someone else, or we're making up things about, you know, ourselves a lot of times that is not true. So being able to just stop for a minute and say, okay, I'm getting mad about something. What am I making up about myself, or what am I making up about this scenario? And then what might be true? Just to consider that there is a potential alternative, you know, so that you don't spiral. So
I completely agree. And I think something I learned too, especially going through COVID, that I was thinking I needed to shorten my contracts to be able to give, usually we have 1 year, 2 year contracts, and or they can renew after that, of course. So we've had some clients with us for 5 years at a time, and I shortened it to 6 months, and then every person that I had on 6 months renewed for another 6 months. But it was a lot of paperwork for me, and mm-hmm. having them re-sign the contract and mm-hmm. and renegotiating, or just thinking through all those things again and maybe changing a few things, waiting for them to sign it, getting them on the payment plan again. And one of those clients that renewed, she actually renewed three or two times. So she was a year and a half. And I needed to end the contract at some point because mm-hmm. there was a lot of assumptions she was making about me particularly, mm-hmm. or sayings and accusations like you were talking about. And I was still coming from that kind of like a scarcity because of all the fear around COVID. And what if I can't get another client? And I kept having more conversations with her, but they weren't really going anywhere, and I wasn't being paid for those extra conversations and my time. And and on retrospect, I allowed that to happen because I'm the leader of my company and founder. And I allowed her not to value some of my time. So that's on me. Yeah. And I take full accountability for that. And I learned through that experience, it would have been better for her and myself to say, I'm going to let you out of this contract. Everything is okay here. Like, I feel like we've run our course and I wish you all the best. It would have just made everything
and
so much
in retrospect,
better.
Everything. Yeah. Hindsight is 20/20 though. And it's really hard to have those conversations.
Hard to let go.
Yeah. And hard to have those conversations in the moment, but we learn from them. You know, we learn from, I will say that now that I have gotten in the habit of when I feel it, I say it. So obviously, like if it's like anger, and this is in relationships with my husband or, you know, anybody, but obviously like if it's anger, then I want to like bite my tongue. But if it's just communicating like my truth and my conviction on, you know, any, especially if someone is challenging a core value, you know, of trust or whatever the case may be, like I'm communicating it, you know, instantly as often as possible. And that has really, I think, changed, you know, certainly my confidence and my ability to continue to do it. Like once you practice that from time to time, like you get better at it. Mm-hmm. But also it's, I feel like given just me a newfound respect for myself and being able to identify things that aren't aligned with my values quickly. And then also like having hard conversations with the clients and getting rid of the client if it's not a good fit or if it's not serving me or my team. And so like one hard no that we have, like if someone is speaking to anybody on our team disrespectfully, that's a no brainer. We don't even ask questions. If I feel like my team member feels disrespected, we immediately will let go of the client. And that's happened twice already in 2 years. So
amen.
No amount of money is worth, you know, being disrespected. So
yes, and
something we've got to look out for as women, because I do think it happens. I don't want to,
I agree,
but I do think it happens more with women.
And all of my clients are women at this point, and we were initially working with men too, and we just love supporting women. And all the people on the podcast are women too. And I've had the experience where someone went through the whole application process to be on the podcast, and then my assistant was working with them to get scheduled, and they were really rude with them. And we said, nope, you disrespected the team member. That's not how you talk to somebody on my team. And I'm not moving forward with this. This is not a good fit.
Good for you. That's awesome.
Yeah, because I completely agree.
Life is short.
Yes. Like they're a representation of me. They're an extension
Absolutely.
Of me. And if there's the possibility to be disrespectful to a teammate, there's a possibility to be it's just, to me, it's synonymous with being disrespectful to me.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very protective of,
yes,
of my
as
team.
You should be. And honestly, I'm sure they love and respect you for that.
They tell me that a lot. Yes.
That's what it's all about. Like if there's anything we can do as leaders, it's go to bat for our team. And make sure they feel like they're protected by us.
And our family. That's for me.
Yep.
It's a core value.
Yep.
And I want to dive right into a childhood story reflecting what you do today. Because that's actually probably my favorite question.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that is a good question. Let me think. A childhood story I will say, my mom did not work outside the home until I was in college. So we live in a very, you know, I'm in very south, you know, the southeast part of the United States. I'm in a southern Mississippi town, you know, very, you know, conservative family, you know, values and that type of thing. And so the environment that I grew up in, not just in my family, but really just around me, very traditional. Most of my friends' moms, you know, were homemakers, which I have a lot of friends today that are homemakers. But I never looked at my dad working outside the home and my mom working inside the home as being different in their workload. If anything else, like my mom was pulling a very heavy lift inside the home and was, you know, was still you know, she would get on the lawnmower, mow the grass. She would, you know, she would do a huge heavy lift of the home that still was just as much work. And of course, those of us who are working moms know that, you know, the hardest job is at home 100%, or for me anyway, it is. I mean, that's, you know, that's the most challenging. So my mom was just as hard of a worker. Her work ethic, you know, is exceptional. And always has been. And I was able to see work ethic valued equally for my mom, who was inside the home, and my dad, who was outside the home. And it really was never about like where the dollars came from. And so I just feel like that has kind of shaped. I mean, my husband is in ministry. So, you know, our economics look probably a little bit different than the normal Southern household, but it works for us. It's wonderful. To see in our household, my husband step up to, especially in the season, like me starting this business was very much our decision, not my decision. Because, you know, for me to start a business meant that I was going to be traveling and going to be away from home. And so I needed just as much him to commit to it as me. And so I think that was modeled by my parents, both seeing that because my mom, you know, was a homemaker inside the home, it never occurred to me that her job was any less important. It wasn't, you know, it was just, if anything, more important. But I think that traditional roles, which thankfully I do feel like we're kind of moving out of, hopefully a little bit slower in Mississippi, maybe, but those traditional roles of the home, you know, kind of started with my parents' generation changing. And I'm seeing just in my marriage, in our home, I loved this past week. My 3-year-old, he's really into cooking. He opted out of the water slide at a birthday party last weekend to stay inside and cook. And it made my heart so happy because he's learning that from his dad. You know, he's not cooking because he sees mom cook. Trust me. So I just loved that, you know, my upbringing really, I feel like kind of led me, you know, into my adulthood, really understanding, and thankfully married someone who we both feel like it is 100% team effort. And there have been seasons in our marriage, and I saw this in my parents' marriage too, but there have been seasons in my marriage where I've carried her a heavier lift at home, and then now we're in a season where he's carrying a heavier lift at home, and I think that is just great to see. And for my kids to see.
Yes. Did you have a little business when you were little too?
No.
Sell anything?
I will say, I'm glad you asked that. I did make business cards in fifth grade with my friend Bethany with our home phone numbers on it because, you know, there were no cell phones or any other way to get in touch with anybody besides your home phone number. But we did have a babysitting service, and we went down to the local, you know, gift shop that printed back, you know, in the day. It was a cool thing to have like your own gift tags, like to put on gifts you could have. So we had the gift tag created with our names on it, and we handed that out for babysitting gigs. I've always worked. And when I was 13, I worked at the local snow cone stand. That was also the summer that I gained a lot of weight. I was testing too many snow cones, but worked at the local snow cone stand, worked at a law firm in high school. I worked throughout high school, worked in college. You know, that's just always been a part of, again, who I am. I've never considered otherwise. So I think that has, you know, kind of been, I've always, again, I'm an Enneagram 3. So achievement is something that's very important to me. So I can't shake it.
But yeah, I totally respect that. I definitely relate to what you're saying. Oh, the next question I want to dive in. If you were to start a new business today, Laura, what do you feel like are the top 5 things you wish you had known before or that you've learned along the way?
Interesting that you asked this. I just published a blog post less than a month ago that's the top 6 things, not 5, but the top 6 things that I wish that I would have known before starting an agency. So I'm going to do 6 if that's okay.
Yeah,
okay?
Perfect.
Okay. And they're all in this one place. Yeah. If you go to thebusinessbrewers.com, you can read it. But okay. The first thing is just do good work and quit worrying so much about sales. Like if you do good work, the sales will come. And I feel like I was, again, kind of going back to like when I first stepped out on my own, I don't know that I fully trusted myself. And I was so worried about the numbers so that I could get paid instead of just like leaning into doing the good work and dreaming big and just committing to quality. So I would say just do good work and the rest will fall into place. Making it a point, and this is not for everybody, but for me, I became more profitable when I focused on an industry and really, selected my point of focus. And I think that, in marketing agencies, of course, people can be generalist agencies. And I started as that, but I've always been in B2B tech. And so after about 6 months, I realized, hey, I looked at my clients and I said, okay, where am I making the most impact? Where am I making the most money? Where am I having the most fun? I looked at those three things and quickly realized that after being in technology for 19 years, that it was time to select my focus. So we focused on tech at that point. And that's been, so I probably would have done that sooner and just started that way. I took 6 months to figure that out. But third would be recognizing and unleashing your team superpowers. Once you start building a team, I think that we're wise in leadership to recognize the skills that our team has and make sure that we're not trying to fit them into a role. For me, I try to make sure my team knows the plan of who we're hiring next, because I would really hate to hire somebody for a position that someone else on my team wanted. So
that's really a good point.
Really making sure that we're, as fast as we're growing, that we're recognizing the skills that our team have, communicating often about what's coming in terms of open positions, and then just making room for their gifts instead of just feeling like, oh, well, so-and-so's already always done this, so this is what they're going to keep doing. Like, that's not a growth mindset. SOPs, I would fly by the seat of my pants all day if I could. but that's not healthy for scaling and growing. So I would establish SOPs earlier. We're in the middle of doing them. Revising them, I guess, right now. Vicky, my VP of Ops, is working on those, and I would have done them way sooner had I had the bandwidth. And then hire smart and hire early. I think that the worst hire you can make is one that you make in desperation.
Uh-huh.
So if you're desperate to hire, then you're going to bring somebody on that's not the right fit. So just making sure that you hire ahead of the need, if at all possible. I know that not all the time money allows for that, but if it does. Also, just learning from other CEOs. I've made it a point this year to really spend time with other people doing what I'm doing, specifically in marketing agencies. They're the ones that referred me the book, Buy Back Your Time. The book changed my life. I've got another trip planned and later this year to go down and spend more time with them, just making it a point to be around other people that can help me cast better vision and be a better CEO.
Wow, you summarized that so fast.
Yes. I just wrote the blog, so it's fresh.
Perfect. Yes, I completely agree with all of those. Those are really important, and we're combing through all of our SOPs. I like to refer to it as an evolving document. It's constantly, never finished.
Exactly.
And what do you feel like are the top three traits that make someone the successful entrepreneur?
You have to be self-motivated, because, I just thought that waking up in the mornings and not wanting to go to work was something that happened when you work for someone else, but it actually can happen even if you're your own boss. There are some days where, like, the Monday after a holiday and I'm exhausted and we were all up late and it was a long weekend and, getting up is hard. But I think that, being a self-starter, being able to, be self-motivated and get up. And because you don't just have to get up and show up, you have to get up and lead. And so that's where I'm learning things like that 20 minutes every morning, or the exercise, or, spending one day a month just by myself, which is very hard for me, like taking those types of things and committing to them so that you can be a better leader. I think that's really important. That's, I'd say just being able to be a self-starter. And then I think that had I not had a lot of trust in my team, I wouldn't have hired 17 people at this point. Like, it's the first two or three hires were really hard to make. And then all of a sudden, I'm just letting my team lead the hiring process, and they run the hire by me when they feel competent. And like, I could really hang on to that process and try to get involved, but I trust my team. And if we fail, we're going to fail forward, so we can all do it together. So really just having I know I've talked about trust a lot, but obviously it's really important to me, but just having confidence in your team and trusting them to get the work done, I think is huge.
It is huge. I have a member of my team who does all of our social media and answers all questions on social media. And that's taken me a lot of trust, because she's representing the whole company and our voice and everything. And she designs the graphics. And to be honest, a lot of times when I give her an idea or I say, this is more what I want about something. Well, I usually don't have to do that lately because she just does it and does it amazingly.
Yeah.
I think it's hard for us to admit that there's areas where someone can do it better than
I know. Yeah. I know.
I'm gonna be honest.
But isn't that fun when you finally get to be honest with yourself and you realize how freeing that is?
It's completely freeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because I could have spent 5 hours doing that and it probably still wouldn't look as good.
Right.
A lot of the graphics.
And that's really what it's all about, I think, is like figuring out that and then empowering your team to do the work. I think that's awesome.
Before we hop off, Laura, this is kind of similar to what we were just talking about. What are the three top concepts that you feel like everybody in the audience needs to hear?
Just in general about entrepreneurship or?
Yeah, in general or life hacks or anything.
I think kind of going back to that clear as kind, I think that a lot of times we are hesitant to be honest because we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or, and what I have learned about not being very clear about whether it's expectations, accountability, like you can't be unclear with someone and then expect them to read your mind. I mean, we all know if you're married, even newly married, like, you know, that you can't expect your husband to read your mind or your spouse to read you. Like that's just not. So in the same way, like you can't expect your team to hit the goals that you've set out if you're not clear. So clear is kind. That's Brené Brown. I very much love, I know I've already mentioned one book, but Dare to Lead. It's a book that she wrote that has also transformed me as a business leader. I highly recommend it.
I'll have to pick that up. We also have a best-selling book called Redefine.
All right.
It made myself and the 8 other women featured in the book best-selling authors.
Nice. I'm going to read it. It's on my list now.
Amazing. Perfect. And I do love that clear is kind. That's something that my now husband, it feels still new to say that.
I love it.
But he always tells me it's easy because that's more of how I communicate. Sometimes he thinks I'm really upset. Maybe that's the 8 Enneagram.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm passionate and fiery when I communicate it. Then I've moved on. If we've came up with a solution, I've already forgotten that.
Yeah.
About it, most likely we're moving forward. And
that's so good, though. That's a skill that I think does not come easily to everybody.
Yeah, he tells me about that. I'm so grateful that you don't hold on to things, or you don't hold anything in, because I'm not repressing anything. This is where I'm at with this. This is how I feel. And
when honestly, like to me as a business owner, if you're holding on to things, like the business is not moving forward. Like, why are we looking behind? Like, we're all the same for us. Like, we're always just looking ahead. So if there's anything that we need to resolve, we're just going to knock it out and talk about it. So that's very healthy, I think.
Yes. And thank you so much, Laura, for being with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed this.